Welcome to 5-Minute Journal Club, current and future role of cell-free DNA assays in the management of non-small cell lung cancer. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. I met with Dr. Natalie Vokes from the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston to review a number of important presentations and publications on this topic. Accompanying this program is a slide set with the papers and key data points that were discussed in the program used for your reference. To begin, I asked Dr. Vokes to comment on a series of papers looking at cell-free DNA in patients treated with surgery for localized disease.
There's a number of different ways that these studies are being done with respect to are they looking preoperatively, postoperatively, but for the most part, the question is, what do we learn in patients in whom we have a ctDNA positive or negative result after surgical resection? The first study looked both pre-op and post-op, and what they show is that the pre-op ctDNA detection levels don't seem to associate in a statistically significant way with either recurrence-free survival or overall survival. But when you have positive ctDNA after your definitive curative intent treatment, in this case surgery, then that does associate negatively. I think an important caveat in all of these studies as we go through is that the number of patients who have ctDNA detected post-surgery tends to be fairly low. And then they also look at patients who then had detection of ctDNA turn positive in the longitudinal follow-up setting. And that also clearly associates with worse survival as well as recurrence-free survival. So I think what this study tells us is when you find ctDNA after surgery, it's not a good sign. Another nice feature about this study is they march through all of their patients in fairly granular detail. So you can kind of dissect when does the ctDNA turn positive? When do the scans turn positive? They show that the lag between ctDNA and scans is about 3 months.
So can you talk a little bit about the types of assays that are being done, the bespoke and non-bespoke, and what assays are you using at MD Anderson?
Yeah, so a lot of the studies that we're going to look at today used a tumor-informed assay. A lot of them use the Signatera assay, but there are also others that they were using. I think for patients who've undergone a surgical resection, a tumor-informed assay is a great strategy because you have the tissue from the tumor resection to do the tumor-informed profiling, and you have a bit of time in that adjuvant setting to do the assay if you need to. I think using a tumor-informed assay in the metastatic setting when you don't necessarily have a lot of pretreatment tissue, and you tend to need the information faster. Logistically, it can be more challenging. But for a lot of these surgical papers, what we see is tumor-informed assays, because what we need in that context is high sensitivity.
One of the interesting things that seems to be happening in colon cancer is in stage 2 disease, where a lot of patients are not treated if they don't have any high risk factors. And there, when they do see positive MRD, they have a very poor prognosis, and now they're starting to treat. Are there situations right now that you're talking about who initially have lower stage disease? And how often do you see recurrences and deaths in that subset? And is that potentially a useful target to think about? And is this trial going to be looking at that?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously our hallmark in the lung cancer community up until recently has been stage. And that's simply because when we looked at our chemotherapy adjuvant or neoadjuvant studies across different stages, those patients where the risk-benefit threshold crossed were stage 2 or higher. That's not to say that we don't see recurrences in early stage patients, and it's not to say that every higher stage patient will recur, which is what I always tell my patients when we try to discuss, you know, how to think through this, which is a a patient education challenge. So I think there's definitely room to individualize how much we give to our early stage or late stage patients. I think a very concentrated set of questions in the lung cancer community specifically are patients with very early stage driver mutant positive patients in whom it would not be terribly challenging to give a TKI compared to indefinite chemo or immunotherapy. And then the other question is around when do we stop our adjuvant targeted therapy, if ever? And in whom would we give adjuvant immunotherapy if they got neoadjuvant chemoimmunotherapy? And those are all instances where I think ctDNA assessment with an appropriately sensitive assay could help inform those decisions.
Could you think of a situation, again, with localized disease, a patient who doesn't have any driver mutations, where you would currently usually not offer like adjuvant chemotherapy, but you would if the patient's ctDNA were positive?
Yeah, I think, you know, we want to give adjuvant therapy if we think there's a likelihood of benefit. So to me, somebody where I wouldn't give it a standard of care, but where I would anticipate they would benefit would be somebody, let's say, with a very extensive smoking history, a high PD-L1, who has an upfront resection and ends up with a 3.9 centimeter tumor with, you know, lymphovascular invasion and all of these high risk features. Even now, I might consider giving adjuvant immunotherapy in that patient. But if I had positive ctDNA and I thought the immunotherapy were likely to benefit, that would be very compelling.
Do you think at this point there's enough evidence to utilize, assuming you could access these type of assays, or for example, Signatera? Do you ever use it outside a clinical trial? Do you see docs in practice using it outside a clinical trial?
So I've talked about this a lot actually with my patients who bring it up because they see different advertisements or headlines about blood tests. And what I always tell my patients is that I like to do a test when it helps me make a decision rather than just gives me a good or a bad feeling. And I do think a lot of the ctDNA assessment that we look at may give you a good or a bad feeling, but it wouldn't tell you what to do. To my mind, the situation where it most clearly tells me what to do is in the adjuvant osimertinib setting, and in particular, when you have patients getting to the end of their 3 years of osimertinib and who are going to come off therapy, that's when I have sent it in my clinical practice. And I've done it so far on two or three patients. I have used a tumor-informed assay, and I've had one patient turn positive, and then we restarted the osimertinib in that patient.
And actually, we're about to look at the ADAURA trial, but again, in the post-neoadjuvant setting, if you were going to use it, do you think it would be more useful in people who have path CRs, where if it were positive, you might use adjuvant therapy, or is it just too early to even be thinking about that? It kind of seems like the post-neoadjuvant setting after surgery might be a time you might want to use it to make that decision, but you tell me.
I think so. I think that if you had a positive ctDNA result post-surgery, post-neoadjuvant therapy, that might be a situation where, irrespective of path CR or not, we are identifying higher risk patients. And so those would be ones in whom the path CR may be less convincing and you might continue with further immunotherapy.
All right, let's talk about the ADAURA study and the MRD data there.
Yeah. So I think this is a really nice study and a nice set of data. The ADAURA study, of course, looked at adjuvant osimertinib in patients with EGFR mutated lung cancer who'd undergone surgical resection and then in some instances chemotherapy per investigator preference. And what they did on this study is they collected blood and plasma for tumor-informed analysis across different time points longitudinally. So there's a really nice longitudinal data set. And I think one of the big questions that is now present in clinical practice in the post-ADAURA era is, does adjuvant osimertinib truly improve rates of cure? And we can give 3 years of osimertinib and then stop, and then the cancer is never going to come back? Or have we suppressed the cancer for 3 years, and after we stop it, we anticipate that the cancer would eventually come back? And I think there's a strong argument to be made for both of those cases, which we'll see as the data play out. So I think the ctDNA can be very helpful in this setting. Many of these studies look at the immediate kind of post-op pre-treatment time point and the outcomes in those patients. So that's the first set of data they show are those patients who are MRD positive at time of randomization. In general, we see similar rates here, about 5 to 10%. In this study, it was 8%. The effect of chemo on, of adjuvant chemo on this detection rate seemed to be most pronounced for stage two. So stage two patients who'd gotten adjuvant chemo had very low rates of MRD detection at randomization. This was not as present for stage three, which is kind of an interesting finding. And what they show in the patients with detectable MRD is that all of these patients on the control arm recur, and they tend to recur pretty quickly, most of them within 1 year. The patients who go onto the osimertinib arm, several of them recur while on therapy, but 4 out of 5 of them clear. So the osimertinib does actually help them clear their ctDNA. 2 of them recur on therapy, and 3 of them do not recur during the time that they receive the adjuvant osimertinib. The interesting thing, though, I think, is that all 3 of them eventually have their ctDNA turn back positive. One of them, it looks like, hadn't quite gotten to radiographic recurrence. They had the ctDNA turn positive at the time, what looks like the end of follow-up. But I would suspect that in 3 to 6 months, that patient will also have radiographic recurrence. So I think a very clear conclusion from this for me in clinical practice would be if you do that pre-OC ctDNA assessment and it's positive, that's probably a patient who would go on lifelong osimertinib. The other patients, so those who are not MRD positive at time of initiation of osimertinib, have a little bit more mixed outcomes. Patients who are treated with the placebo, a lot of them recur. This is, of course, why it's a positive study. But when you look at the patients who did not start MRD positive and were treated with osimertinib, we have another 17% of patients who then recur after the end of osimertinib. So clearly, osimertinib is benefiting. 75% of patients don't recur compared to 31% in the placebo group. But we do see MRD and disease-free recurrence after the end of osimertinib in 17% of patients, most within the first year, but another 37% within the second year off therapy. And I think it'll be very interesting to follow this out for another couple years and see if we continue to have a slow trickle of recurrences in years 3 and 4. Because again, that would suggest to me that these are patients in whom ultimately we may not want to be stopping osimertinib. And in our post-chemo RT patients, those patients are now the standard of care is to give indefinite osimertinib. So there's a real clinical question for these patients.
So I guess another question would be right now, you have a patient, fits the criteria, you're going to use adjuvant osimertinib. Are you getting a ctDNA analysis? Which one? And then when do you get it done? When do you do it?
So I have not been getting the post-surgery pre-OC ctDNA assessment, but I do think this data is pretty compelling. I think there's a rationale to bank the blood at that time point and then do a tumor-informed or highly sensitive assay to look. Because, as I said, I think if those patients are positive, I would probably give indefinite osimertinib. And then the other time point that I think is helpful is after they stop. So if you have a patient who's been negative post-op and who's negative at the time of that 3-year mark, then I have started in interested patients to do a tumor-informed ctDNA assay.
What about other targeted therapy situations in the adjuvant setting, ALK or maybe others? I don't read.
I mean, ALK, we have the approval for alectinib, and I think the same thoughts apply. I haven't had as many of those patients. I have one who's on adjuvant alectinib right now, and he's a year in. So we'll come to this in a year from now. But I do think it's the same types of considerations since it's so easy to continue the targeted therapy.
What about locally advanced disease, non-surgically resectable, durvalumab, targeted therapy seen? Do we have any data there?
For ctDNA, we do have some studies coming out of the Stanford group led by Max Dean and others showing that ctDNA in that setting is similarly prognostic. So if you have positive ctDNA, that associates with a higher likelihood of recurrence. So I think a lot of the same considerations apply. It's a higher risk population. We saw in the use of osimertinib after chemoradiation that those patients on the placebo arm very rapidly recurred. So for some context, even if they're stage three, they're likely almost essentially metastatic. That may not be true for all comers, but certainly seems to be true, for example, for EGFR high stage twos.
So we talked about neoadjuvant therapy and potential use of ctDNA. Here are two papers. One from the New England Journal looking at neoadjuvant nivolumab, and the other from the ASCO meeting, a presentation from the Aegean trial. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so these are two perioperative chemoimmunotherapy studies. The first study was CheckMate 816, which is three cycles of neoadjuvant chemo plus nivolumab. The second study is the Aegean trial, which is four cycles of neoadjuvant chemo plus durva, followed by adjuvant durva, so slightly different contexts. The first paper, the main results are really to show that this was positive for overall survival. So this is a really nice data point to see, since a lot of these neoadjuvant or perioperative studies to date hadn't read out OS. So this was one of our first positive OS results. And then they did also look at the ctDNA clearance prior to surgery and how that associates with outcome. And what they show is, as you would expect, that patients who clear have better outcomes than patients who don't. But the interesting thing that they show in a set of kind of confusing figures is the association between clearance and path CR. So in patients who are treated with chemoimmunotherapy who clear, there's a high association between that and path CR. And every patient treated with chemoimmunotherapy who achieves a path CR had also achieved ctDNA clearance. For the patients who are treated with chemo alone, there is a much more heterogeneous association between ctDNA clearance and path CR. So some patients with path CR didn't clear. Some patients who cleared did not have path CR. So it's just not as tightly linked, which I think gets to this theory of mine that chemotherapy in general causes a decrease in ctDNA, but isn't as clearly associated with kind of significant disease control at a molecular level. High level, as we saw in some of the other studies, patients who clear preoperatively go on to have better outcomes, irrespective of their treatment arm. Patients who don't clear have worse outcomes, irrespective of their treatment arm. And then there's a little bit of added benefit that you get in the Nevo group in both of those settings. But for the most part, those curves look pretty overlapping. So that's the 816 data. The Aegean data looked at a different time point. So they looked at the post-surgical clearance, but they did also have longitudinal samples during the neoadjuvant induction phase. And similar to what we saw in 816, patients who clear postoperatively do much better. Patients who don't clear do much worse. The benefit for the durva is more pronounced in the clearance group, but I think it's hard to disentangle the non-clearance group since these are the patients who never cleared to begin with, and so we're just not seeing as much benefit from that neoadjuvant therapy. And then kind of not surprisingly, patients who are positive post-op are much more likely to recur. So 76% rate of recurrence in the 10% of patients who are MRD positive compared to 12% in those who are negative. So finding ctDNA is never a good thing in terms of your prognosis.
Can you talk a little bit about the current approach that you and your colleagues at MD Anderson are taking with localized non-small cell, and particularly which neoadjuvant therapy approach are you using in general outside a trial, and what kind of clinical trial are you conducting right now?
So we do try to put all of these patients on trial if we can. We have the NeoCOAST trials. So Those all use Durva as the backbone, and then usually there's additional agents added on. For the patients who are not eligible for a neoadjuvant study, we do also have a vaccine trial, which patients who don't achieve path CR could go on to. And the backbone for that study is pembrolizumab with chemotherapy. So as a result, I think most of us will do 3 to 4 cycles of chemo plus pembro neoadjuvantly to then have the option for the vaccine study in those who don't achieve path CR. And I think that's a very good option. I would tend to choose between that or the 816 or 77T regimen, which is the chemo plus nevo, and then do 3 to 4 cycles based on how patients are responding after 2 cycles.
Just out of curiosity, what kind of vaccine are you looking at?
So this one is a tumor-informed vaccine. So they take the surgical specimen, and then they infer a set of neoantigens, and then they design it for that. It's the InterPath study. But we do also have some studies in the metastatic setting and other contexts that are just a panel of tumor antigens.
But these are mRNA vaccines?
Yes. Yeah. And MD Anderson had the data that showed an association between mRNA vaccines and a better immunotherapy response for COVID vaccines. So it seems to me like giving a vaccine is kind of a freebie to potentially boost your immune checkpoint inhibitor response.
What about your work on ctDNA in patients with PD-L1 high metastatic disease?
So this was a paper that we presented at ASCO looking at ctDNA dynamics in patients with metastatic lung cancer who were treated with either cemiplimab or chemotherapy. So high PD-L1 patients, we looked at ctDNA levels at baseline, at week 3 and week 9, and then correlated the degree of change with outcomes. And what I think was really interesting about the study and the findings is that the dynamics of ctDNA change or are different depending on your treatment context, and their association with outcome are different depending on your treatment context. So for patients who were treated with immunotherapy, particularly by week 9, we saw this kind of bimodal set of dynamics where a third of patients had an increase in their ctDNA levels, and then the other 2/3 had a pretty pronounced decrease, usually greater than 90% or a clearance. Whereas for chemo, we saw certainly the majority were either up or down, but there was a little bit more of a smudge in the middle, even particularly at week 9, where there were these indeterminate levels. Yes, the ctDNA went down, but it was really a minority who actually fully cleared. And I think the more important finding, or the related finding, is that the association with outcome was quite different. So patients who were treated with cemiplimab, who had near or complete clearance of their ctDNA, had very good progression-free and long-term overall survival. Whereas in the chemo patients, there was actually no association between ctDNA reduction or clearance with either radiographic response or with their survival outcomes. And I think this is a really important finding because a lot of times now we give chemotherapy with immunotherapy. And what this suggests to me is that chemotherapy can really smudge how you associate ctDNA changes with outcome. I think chemo in general induces a bit of a decrease in ctDNA, and then I suspect that these come up fairly rapidly, or they don't associate with those molecular changes, and it certainly does not associate with long-term outcomes. Whereas what we see over and over is that ctDNA decrease in clearance in an immunotherapy context does associate with more profound disease control. When we looked in the early stage group, it associates with path CR, it associates with better long-term outcomes. So there's a much cleaner signal between ctDNA effects with immunotherapy compared to with chemo. And if we're giving both together, we have to make sure we're not conflating the effects of one treatment on the other.
That's really interesting. You know, one of the challenging questions in lung cancer management is whether to add chemo to IO in PD-1 high. And even this comes up in PD-1, 1 to 50. You have older patients. You don't want to give them chemo. You're hoping maybe their PD-1's 20 or something. You maybe want to give it a chance. Do you see ctDNA helping in trying to decide whether to add the chemo on?
I think that's a very clear potential use case in the metastatic setting. So we've been talking quite a bit up to this point about the earlier stage disease patients. I think in the stage four patients, the clearest situation would either be to help interpret pseudoprogression versus not, where I think it could be helpful, and then also to identify patients where you're starting with a less intense therapy who you then may want to intensify if they're having a suboptimal response.
What about this related study, but with pembrolizumab?
Dr. Anya Gostu is leading a set of studies that essentially build the evidence base for the strategy we were just discussing, which looks at patients who are treated with pembrolizumab to start, who are monitored using a ctDNA assay during the first 6 weeks of treatment to then see how does that associate with outcome. And then this is now being leveraged into a randomized clinical trial to see if we could use that as a platform to identify patients to intensify with chemotherapy. So in the first study, they prospectively enrolled 50 patients to profile with ctDNA in parallel to their standard of care pembrolizumab treatment. They used a tumor-uninformed assay, but it did include white blood cell sequencing to remove germline and CHIP-based artifacts. And what they show in this study is that patients who clear their ctDNA have better outcomes and longer overall survival primarily, even slightly independent from their radiographic response. So obviously, patients who clear, those are enriched in patients who have a complete response or partial response radiographically. But the clearance also flagged patients with stable disease and with progressive disease on scans who, in fact, went on to have longer overall survival. So there's definitely an association between not clearing and shorter overall survival and clearing and longer overall survival. And they are now moving from these findings into a randomized trial. The trial design will enroll patients with PD-L1 greater than 50%. They get treated with 6 weeks of pembrolizumab, and then they are assessed by ctDNA. Those patients with stable disease or non-rapidly progressive disease would be eligible for the study with positive ctDNA and then would be randomized to either continue on pembrolizumab alone or to add chemo.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to Dr. Vokes, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for Current and Future Role of Cell-Free DNA Assays in the Management of Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer.